slices of a silent mind on glass, tracing every shadow chemistry left behind.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Okay, let's jump right in. When we think about something like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, our minds, well, they go straight to proteins.
Of course. You think of alpha-synuclein, you think of plaques and tangles. It feels like a protein problem.
Exactly. But proteins don't just exist in a void. They're part of the brain. And the brain itself, by dry weight, is something like 60 to 70% fat, lipids.
That's absolutely right. They are the building blocks. Mm. Every cell membrane, all the signaling, it's all built on a lipid foundation. It's like, if the bricks of your house are crumbling, you've got a problem no matter how good the plumbing is.
So that's the big question for our deep dive today. What if we've been focusing so much on the protein aggregates in Parkinson's that we've missed the bigger picture? What happens when the very structure of the brain, that massive lipid environment, starts to fail?
Could Parkinson's be what you might call a lipidopathy as much as it is a proteinopathy?
And the paper we're looking at gives an answer that is, well, it's not simple.
No, it's incredibly specific.
And this is where it gets so interesting. The study shows these brain fats don't just, you know, decrease across the board. The changes depend entirely on where you are in the brain.
And when you look, in terms of disease progression,
it's not one big failure. It's more like a series of localized structural collapses. And to see that, to actually map it,
that takes a phenomenal amount of work and precision.
It really does. So today, we really want to celebrate the work of Jenny Hellquist, Christina E. Toomey, and Wendy E. Haywood and their huge international team.
They leveraged tissue bank samples in a way that just gives us this beautiful high-resolution map of what's happening. They've really pushed our understanding forward.
And this is so important because Parkinson's is the most common neurodegenerative movement disorder. We're talking over 6 million people worldwide.
And with an aging population, that number is unfortunately only going up.
For sure. And while everyone talks about genetics and proteins, the evidence for lipids being a key player has been building for years.
Mm-hmm. We've known for a while that alpha-synuclein aggregation is affected by lipids. The protein clumps themselves are actually full of fats.
So what was the missing piece of the puzzle here?
It was the map, the spatial-temporal profile. We didn't know when or where these structural changes were happening as the disease progressed. You know, is it an early trigger or a late-stage consequence?
Okay, so before we get to their findings, let's quickly introduce the main characters, the three big lipid classes they studied. First up, sphingolipids.
Right, so sphingolipids, things like sphingomyelin and ceramides, think of these as the primary structural components. They're key for cell membranes for signaling.
And sphingomyelin specifically has been linked to how alpha-synuclein spreads, right?
That's right, from cell to cell.
Okay, next class, glycosphingolipids. This includes things like glucosylceramide or hexer.
And this one is a huge deal in Parkinson's research. A problem in the pathway that breaks down these lipids is linked to the single most common genetic cause of PD.
The GBA1 mutation.
The GBA1 mutation, exactly. So any changes here could be a really important clue.
So that's two. What's the third and final group?
That would be the phospholipids. This includes things like lyso-TC and a special group called plasmalogens.
And they're also part of the membrane structure.
They are. But some, like the PE plasmalogens, also act as really powerful antioxidants in the brain. They help clean up damaging reactive oxygen species.
That sets the stage perfectly. So how did the team actually measure all of this with such precision?
Well, this is where the scale of this study is so impressive. They took 225 post-mortem biopsies from 8 different brain regions.
8 regions, so we're talking the caudate, putamen, frontal cortex.
And cerebellum, yes. Yeah. A really comprehensive anatomical spread. And they didn't just group them into healthy and PD.
No, they staged them.
Exactly. They had controls, mid-stage PD and late-stage PD, based on something called break staging.
Could you just quickly remind us what break stages mean?
Of course. It's basically a roadmap for how Parkinson's pathology spreads. It starts low in the brainstem, and stage 3 to 4 means it's hit those key subcortical areas, like the substantia nigra, that control movement.
Then stage 5 to 6.
That's when it's spread out to the cortex, the outer brain layer, which is usually linked to later cognitive symptoms.
So they weren't just comparing a PD brain to a healthy brain. They were comparing, say, an early stage putamen to a late stage frontal cortex.
Precisely. The resolution is just orders of magnitude higher.
And what technology did they use to measure the 146 different lipids?
They used targeted liquid chromatography, mass spectrometry, or LC-MSMS. It's the gold standard for this kind of work. It lets you identify and quantify very specific molecules with high accuracy.
But I imagine one huge challenge is that our brains change just from getting older. How did they account for that?
That was a really, really rigorous part of the study. First, they analyzed all the control samples to map out what normal brain aging looks like, lipid-wise.
So they found a baseline for healthy aging.
Yes. For example, they saw that N-hexacylceramide tends to go up with age pretty much everywhere. So they took that pattern and used it to age adjust all the PD data.
So every change they report is purely disease related, not just an effect of aging.
That's the goal. It's how you get to a true pathological signal.
And they didn't just stop there, did they? They added another layer.
No, they didn't. And this is the multi-omic part. They correlated all this new lipid data with existing proteomics data from the very same tissue samples.
Which means they could directly link a change in structure, say a certain fat disappearing, to a change in function, like a specific energy pathway failing.
Exactly. It connects the dots in a really powerful way.
Okay, that methodology is just so thorough. Let's get to what they found. What does a healthy brain look like, lipid-wise?
Well, the first thing is that it's not uniform at all. The lipid makeup of the cerebellum is just different from the caudate.
That makes sense.
But what's really interesting is that ceramides, those critical structural lipids, were the most consistent across all regions, only about 15% variation.
Which suggests their levels are really tightly controlled.
Very tightly. In contrast, something like lyso-PE varied by over 50% depending on where you looked.
Okay, so ceramides are stable and vital in a healthy brain. So what happens when Parkinson's hits? Is there one single change that happens everywhere?
There is a kind of global signature, yes. Mm-hmm. Overall, PD brains had higher levels of certain gangliosides, GM1, GM2, GM3, and also more sphingomyelin.
But the real story, the very specific one, was in the ceramides.
Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets technical, but so important. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to the length of their carbon tails, the chain length.
Because that length determines the fat's function in the membrane, right?
It absolutely does. And what they found was that the shorter ones, the C16 and C18 ceramides, were elevated pretty much everywhere in PD brains. They were a key marker separating PD from controls.
Wait, so the brain is making more of these shorter, maybe less stable fats?
It seems to be part of the global response, yes. But here's the flip side. The really stable ones, the very long chain ceramides, C20 and longer.
What about them?
They were going down, they were being depleted, but specifically in a key motor region, the putamen.
Wow. So it's not just ceramides change. The brain is breaking down its most stable structural fats in the motor control center while building up shorter ones elsewhere.
You've got it. And that discovery allowed them to group all the brain regions into two distinct clusters based on their molecular signature.
Okay, tell us about these clusters.
First, you have the cortical cluster, then frontal cortex, areas affected later in the disease. This cluster showed increases in glycosphingal lipids, like gangliosides and hexer.
Which fits the idea of the disease spreading outwards later on.
It does. And then you have the subcortical cluster. This is the putamen and caudate. The areas hit early on that control movement.
And they had a totally different signature.
A completely different chemical fingerprint. They had decreases in those glycosphingal lipids, but increases in certain phospholipids. The putamen just showed the most profound changes overall.
Let's zoom in on the putamen then. How early did these changes appear?
Very early. In mid-stage PD, so break stage 3 to 4, that's when you see this widespread depletion of sphinx lipids, that critical drop in the very long chain ceramides, and also in the antioxidant plasmalogen PE. It's an early foundational collapse.
The detail here is just stunning. Let's pivot now from the what to the why. What does this structural failure mean for the cell's ability to, you know, survive and make energy?
This is where connecting to the proteomics data was so crucial. They found that the lipids that were changing in the putamen, the plasmalogen PE, the very long chain ceramides, were significantly correlated with the decrease in mitochondrial complex high conductivity.
So a structural failure is directly linked to an energy failure.
In the exact same place. And this isn't a vague correlation, it's a very strong statistical link. It suggests these two problems, lipid dysregulation and mitochondrial failure, are feeding each other.
It sounds like a pathological handshake happening right where the disease is taking hold.
It does. And this brings us back to that ceramide paradox. Why are the shorter C16 and C18 ceramides going up everywhere?
Right.
The hypothesis is that they're being made through the de novo synthesis pathway. The cell knows it's losing ceramides, maybe because the cleanup pathway is broken-like in GBA1 mutations. so it's desperately trying to make new ones from scratch.
And is it possible that this attempt to fix the problem is actually making things worse?
That's precisely the idea. The C18 ceramide, in particular, is thought to trigger an alternative pathway for clearing out damaged mitochondria, a process called mitophagy.
And if that alternative pathway is defective,
then you end up with a buildup of damaged, energy-deficient mitochondria, creating this vicious cycle of failure right there in the putamen.
So a protective mechanism gone wrong, but did they see any signs of what might be a successful protective mechanism?
Yes, absolutely. It looks like the brain is trying to adapt. For instance, the increase in ganglioside GM1 in the cortical areas later in the disease. Well, GM1 has known neurorestorative properties.
So it's the brain trying to repair itself.
Or the late stage increase in the antioxidant plasmalogen PE in the putamen. That could be a direct response to fight the oxidative stress from the failing mitochondria.
What about lyso-PC? You mentioned that one earlier. It went up and was highest in the cerebellum, a region that's mostly spared by PD.
Lyso-PC is a bit of a puzzle. Its high levels in a healthy area like the cerebellum might suggest it's protective, maybe shielding that region from alpha-synuclein.
But it's not that simple.
The researchers point out that other studies are conflicting. Some even suggest it could promote aggregation. So we really need to figure out if it's a friend or foe.
So at the end of the day, what does this all mean for finding a treatment? We can't just develop a drug that, say, boosts all ceramides everywhere.
No, you absolutely can't. This work really argues that we have to move beyond thinking of the PD brain as one thing. Therapeutics will likely need to be region-specific and stage-specific.
So for early-stage PD, you might need a drug that targets the putamen specifically.
A drug that can restore those very long-chain ceramides or boost mitochondrial complex I function right there in that subcortical cluster before the damage spreads.
I think that's the ultimate take-home message. Parkinson's isn't a single event. It's a regionally distinct process, and we can see it reflected in the very bricks and mortar of the brain.
Mm-hmm. The central insight is that balance. The specific balance between short and long chain ceramides and its direct link to mitochondrial failure in the putamen. That seems to be a critical early convergence point that we can now track.
Which leaves us with a really provocative thought. Given this incredibly detailed link between anatomy, disease stage, and molecular profile, what does this mean for developing truly personalized therapies that can target the signature of Parkinson's disease exactly where and when it begins?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Thin slices of a silent mind on glass, tracing every shadow chemistry left behind. Ceramide whispers running through the maze, patterns in the wiring frozen in their face. Long nights bending over maps of fading fire. Spark. what falls in the core. At the edge it starts to climb. Still we map these pathways, hoping they align to heal.